On Fridays, the lake was bustling with families out for a day in the sun. But it was midweek, and there was only Bobo and me. Us and a couple of long-haired, bearded tourists. Hippies, I'd heard them called. They were sitting on the dock, feet dangling in the water, fishing poles in hand. I asked Bobo why they grew their hair long, but Bobo grunted, didn't answer. He was preparing a speech for the next day, flipping through a havoc of handwritten pages, making notes here and there with a pencil. I bit into my egg and asked Bobo if it was true what a boy in school had told me, that if you ate a piece of eggshell, you'd have to pee it out. Bobo grunted again. I took a bite of my sandwich. One of the yellow-haired tourists laughed and slapped the other one on the back. In the distance, across the lake, a truck lumbered around the corner on the hill. Sunlight twinkled in its side-view mirror. I think I have saraton, I said. Cancer. Bobo lifted his head from the pages flapping in the breeze. Told me I could get the soda myself. All I had to do was look in the trunk of the car. Outside the orphanage the next day, they ran out of chairs. A lot of people had to stand to watch the opening ceremony. It was a windy day, and I sat behind Bobo on the little podium just outside the main entrance of the new building. Bobo was wearing a green suit and a caracol hat. Midway through the speech, the wind knocked his hat off and everyone laughed. He motioned to me to hold his hat for him, and I was glad to, because then everyone would see that he was my father, my Bobo. He turned back to the microphone and said he hoped the building was sturdier than his hat, and everyone laughed again. When Bobo ended his speech, people stood up and cheered. They clapped for a long time. Afterwards, people shook his hand. Some of them tasseled my hair and shook my hand too. I was so proud of Bobo, of us. But despite Bobo's successes, people were always doubting him. They told Bobo that running a business wasn't in his blood, and he should study law like his father. So Bobo proved them all wrong by not only running his own business, but becoming one of the richest merchants in Kabul. Bobo and Rahim Khan built a wildly successful carpet exporting business, two pharmacies, and a restaurant. When people scoffed that Bobo would never marry well, after all, he was not of royal blood, he wedded my mother, Sofia Akrami, a highly educated woman universally regarded as one of Kabul's most respected, beautiful, and virtuous ladies. And not only did she teach classic Farsi literature at the university, she was a descendant of the royal family, a fact that my father playfully rubbed in the skeptics' faces by referring to her as my princess. With me as the glaring exception, my father molded the world around him to his liking. The problem, of course, was that Bobo saw the world in black and white, and he got to decide what was black and what was white. You can't love a person who lives that way without fearing him too, maybe even hating him a little. When I was in fifth grade, in the old Istiqlal Middle School, we had a mullah who taught us about Islam. His name was Mullah Fatihullah Khan, a short, stubby man with a face full of acne scars and a gruff voice. He lectured us about the virtues of zakat and the duty of hajj. He taught us the intricacies of performing the five daily namaz prayers and made us memorize verses from the Quran. And though he never translated the words for us, he did stress, sometimes with the help of a stripped willow branch, that we had to pronounce the Arabic words correctly so that God would hear us better. He told us one day that Islam considered drinking a terrible sin. Those who drank would answer for their sin on the day of Qiyamah, Judgment Day.